Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session, pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. The court has one matter remaining on the submission docket this morning. It is the State of Texas versus Jerry Windham and others from Brazos County. The court has allotted 15 minutes for each side to present oral argument. Petitioner may reserve whatever time it desires for rebuttal. And the court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner. Let me announce that Justice Gamage is not here this morning, but he will participate in the deliberations and decision of this case.
May it please the court, Mr. Heidenheimer will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Mr. Davis. My name is Mark Heidenheimer, and I represent the petitioner of the state of Texas in this case through the Office of the Attorney General. The case that the court is hearing today, the central issue involves whether a jury can hear and see all testimony and evidence relating to a disputed fact issue that affects market value, or whether the landowner can determine this disputed fact issue by simply filing a motion in limine and determining by fiat that the jury shall not consider that fact. That's what this whole case is about, is getting all the testimony and evidence to the jury for them to make a factual determination. In the case at bar, the disputed factual issue involves the definition and the determination of what an independent economic unit is for the subject property. The court is aware this is a condemnation case. An independent economic unit is an appraisal concept that deals with market facts. An independent economic unit is an area of land that has the same highest and best use. There are several scenarios that can occur, but the cornerstone first is the highest and best use. What is the highest and best use? Highest and best use is that use that one can put the property that will result in the most profit based on actual market demand. That's the key, based on actual market demand. If it wasn't contingent upon actual market demand, then the highest and best use of every piece of property would be to build an Empire State Building. But because you have to look at market demand, that's a fact issue. And that's the key. The jury has to determine from the market demand what the highest and best use is for the property. And that, in turn, will define what the independent economic unit is from which the value is taken. There are basically three scenarios that can occur, Justices, involving an independent economic unit with the subject hold property. One scenario is that the part taken itself can be an independent economic unit. And for purposes of valuation testimony, that part taken can be considered a whole property. And that is the area of land that the landowner can direct the jury's attention to through the waiver of remainder damages. The next scenario involves a situation where the whole property actually owned by the landowner constitutes the independent economic unit. In this case, the part taken would be a pro rata of the whole. Now, pro rata is an extremely important concept that I sincerely hope I can communicate to each and every one of you, all 8 of you today. Pro rata means that the value of every acre is equal to the value of every other acre.
Why isn't that averaging?
The reason it's not averaging is because it's based on the concept of highest and best use. The definition of an independent economic unit is that area of the property that has the same highest and best use.
So you're allowing the condemning authority to designate the economic unit?
No, sir.
As opposed to the tract to actually condemn.
That's the whole key. What has occurred in this particular case is that the state has been forced to accept as a matter of law through the motion to limine the respondent's contention of a disputed fact issue that the independent economic unit is 3.848.
Well, here the landowner waived any damages to the remainder, did they not?
Yes, sir, they did.
So how can you consider, and there's no question they have a right to do that.
Absolutely. There?
So how can you retain their right to waive damages to the remainder, yet take that remainder into account in determining the value of this tract condemned based upon the entire 19 acres?
The reason is that we're dealing with two separate legal issues here. One issue is the issue of remainder damages. Certainly the landowner has the right to waive remainder damages. The other issue is the valuation of the part taken. And the disputed fact issue here is what area constitutes the independent economic unit of which the part taken is a pro rata. Once again, pro rata meaning that every acre is equal to every other acre within that independent economic unit.
What if the back portion of the land had been used as a dump site for toxic waste? Would you still say that it should be pro rata?
Well, here's the key. This is the reason why it's so important to determine what the independent economic unit is if one is an appraiser trying to factually determine what that area is. If there was a dump site on the back, and let's say the front of the land was for any use other than a dump site, let's say grazing cattle, factually, you're going to have two independent economic units because the highest and best use of the front of the land is for grazing, since the property will sell for a higher price per acre if you're going to use it for grazing than you would as a dump site. And that just emphasizes how much of a factual issue this is, and it also emphasizes why it's such an important cornerstone of the appraisal process. Because before one can determine the value of the part taken, one must first determine what is the independent economic unit based on highest and best use. Therefore, in the scenario you've given, there would be two separate economic units. The economic unit on the back would be irrelevant for purposes of evaluation of the part taken. But the key distinction is, it's a fact issue. And we're not asking the landowners to be forced to accept our version of the fact, any more than we like, in this case, being forced to accept their version of the facts. We're asking that since this is a factual issue, that we be allowed to develop our testimony and evidence to show why we believe the independent economic unit, as in this case, is 19 instead of 3.84 as they presented, and that they be allowed to present testimony and evidence to support their position that it's 3.84 acres. This in turn will influence the sales that one collects as comparable sales, because you need to pick sales at a similar time to best use and size to be truly comparable. Then the jury can decide which theory of the case that they believe, and that will be incorporated in a jury verdict when they reach a dollar amount for the part taken, which translates into a price per acre. These questions re-emphasize the importance of determining an independent economic unit.
So we may never know under your theory which economic unit the jury determines. We'll just have a differential number.
Well, the beauty of it, Justice Phillips, is that we don't need a separate issue submission on that question. And as the court is well aware, if the verdict is within the range of values, then as a matter of law, it's sufficient on appellate review.
Is it necessary for us to revisit State versus Enterprise and the propriety of that ruling for you to prevail?
No, sir, it's not. There's been a recent case in Austin, which is Oak Hill, which is pending motion for rehearing. And in that particular case, Justice Jones wrote the opinion. He states in that opinion that Ramsey and Meyer can be distinguished on their facts. And I would urge to the court, not just suggest, but urge, that once again, the case before you right now, Meyer and Ramsey can be distinguished. As I explain in my brief, there was no factual dispute in Meyer-Ramsey as to what the independent economic unit was or what the highest and best use of the portion of the whole property that included the part was. The parties, in essence, stipulated to that by agreement. Yes, sir?
If the parties had owned 1,000 acres instead of the limited number we have here, would you still say that, would you say that the independent economic unit were 1,000 acres?
Justice, it's a fact issue to be determined by the market. If an appraiser does his job the way he's supposed to, he collects data from the market and determines what the market value of the property is based on what the market is reflecting. He doesn't create market value like a developer.
No, but if he uses his bait, if you let me select the numbers, I can give you the answer. And my question is, if we use a much larger base, you come up with a much smaller number.
The key is, what is the highest and best use of that property?
Of what property? 1,000 acres or 3
well,
acres?
All right. The first thing you have to look at is the whole property actually owned by the landowner. Because that's the property that you're looking at. Then you have to determine, what is the independent economic unit of which the part taken is a part? Now, if we're out west of Pecos and we're running cattle, I don't know how many head of cattle we run per acre, but it's not very many. It's very conceivable that 1,000 acres would be an independent economic unit for ranching purposes, which west of Pecos would be the highest and best use. If we're lucky enough to own 1,000 acres here in Travis County, it's a reasonable deduction that a portion of that property is going to have a different highest and best use than the entirety of it. Once again, that reemphasizes how important it is to allow both sides to develop a theory of what the market is indicating to them, what the independent economic unit is. If we owned 1,000 acres in Travis County, probably some of it would have a highest and best use for commercial property along the frontage of the highway, since we have enough population to create the market demand for commercial uses. The back portion would probably be developed as residential. I believe our time is up.
Council, let me ask you a question too. Is the economic unit limited to the entire tract owned by the landowner? In other words, in Justice Cook's hypothetical, can the economic unit be larger for valuation purposes than all the property owned by the landowner?
That is conceivable. It happens occasionally. Occasionally you have a parcel of land that because of the shape and configuration, the highest and best use would be assembled with an adjoining tract. In fact, I've had that happen in El Paso. But the key there is when you're determining the highest and best use, you acknowledge the highest and best use, and you adjust for the fact that it has to be assembled, and then you determine what the price per acre would be with that highest and best use for the part taken. Those instances don't happen very often, but they do occur where the highest and best use is an assemblage with an adjoining tract. But that actually works to the benefit of the person whose land is being appraised, because if you don't assemble it with the adjoining tract of the highest and best use, the estimation of value will be considerably lower.
Here the economic unit that your expert chose but was not permitted to testify to was the entire 19 acres, correct?
Yes, sir, it was.
But yet 2.12 acres would be carved out of that unit and thus would not be available for any potential highest and best use, would it?
That's correct, but if it doesn't affect the independent economic unit, issue.
Well, it certainly affects the independent economic unit because it's no longer part of the unit anymore, isn't
it? Yes, sir, I understand. What I'm trying to say, I'm not making myself clear, is if you have a particular highest and best use, let's say for a convenience store, and you're looking at the whole property, and you determine that the whole property is one independent economic unit with the highest and best use for commercial. In terms of the independent economic unit, if you still have adequate square footage after the tax to maintain that highest and best use, you haven't lost your independent economic unit. Absolutely, physically, there is a difference in the land.
Council, you were going to give three different scenarios on the independent economic unit, and you never got to the third one. I think I know what it is, but would you just state?
Yes, sir. The third one is anything between less than the whole property but more than the part taken, which is exactly what the landowners alleged in their motion in limine in this particular case. In this case, the take was 2.12 acres, the whole property is 19, and they alleged that 3.84 acres was the independent economic unit. And our position is this is an issue, a factual issue, that should be litigated to the jury for them to decide instead of a court ruling on a motion in limine and concluding the issue.
There are situations where it's clear enough that as a matter of law, the judge should exclude out testimony because it would merely confuse the jury. You concede that, do you not?
Yes, sir.
I mean, if there was 1,000 acres in Austin and the condemning authority tried to say that was all one economic unit, if it were anywhere near this part of the city, the judge would be justified in not allowing that testimony.
Yes, sir.
You're saying merely on the facts of this case that a fact issue would be presented.
I also think that, yes, sir, I am. I also think that most times, if the issue is contested, which if not all times when the issue is contested, it should go to the jury. Because in the 1,000-acre scenario, I firmly believe that the appraisers are going to agree up to a certain point that certain portions of the property aren't the same independent economic unit partaking as a part of.
Well, I was just giving a hypothetical.
But the key is going to be where do you draw that line, and that's where the jury would have the fact dispute to decide as to where that economic unit is, even though we know for sure it's not the back portion of the 1,000 acres.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council. court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Davis will present argument for respondents.
If it pleases this honorable court, I would like to introduce myself. I'm A.W. Davis. I live in Bryan, Texas, and there practice law. By your leave, I would like to introduce Stephen Steele, who tried this case, or I assisted him in the trial of the case, and Mr. Waters, who's at the counsel table with me, who briefed the case for this honorable court. And beginning, by your leave, I'd like to state some three or four things that this case does not involve. First of all, this is not the case where the state built a highway where none existed. Here, State Highway 6 had existed for many years and was and is the main route from Waco and beyond through Bryan and College Station to Houston. The highway was paved, four lanes, and had unlimited access. The state sought to widen the highway by taking about 110 feet of property on each side of the then-existing four-lane highway. Secondly, the landowners do not seek damages to the remainder for denial or limitation of access, security of travel, loss of visibility, or for any other reason, but have waived damages to the remainder altogether and have admitted that the state had a right to take. Thirdly, this is not a case of a large tract of land being taken and the landowner wanting it appraised as several small tracts, presenting the evils employed in the I-30 scandal alluded to in the state's brief. Lastly, it is not a case where the landowners seek to be paid for what they wish they owned, which has been heretofore suggested. What then is the case about? It's a situation where the landowners seek adequate compensation for what they did own and has been taken, and nothing more. The state sought the fee title to a strip of land about 837 feet long, adjacent to then existing State Highway 6, and at an average depth of about 110 feet. This amounted to the 2.12 acres from a total tract of 19 acres. As always, your honors would bear in mind that the state, of course, selected the location, the need first, the location, the depth, and the configuration of the 2.12 acres that was taken.
Mr. Davis, may I ask you, why shouldn't the state be permitted to dispute the economic unit designated by the landowner?
If I had to summarize in not too many words, hopefully, Justice Cronin, I would say that the reason they can't dispute it under the law as it now exists in this state is because of State versus Meyer. Since 1966, I believe it was, the writing of Corpus Christi Court and the writings of this court, in those opinions, the landowner has had an absolute right to waive damages to the remainder. All we're doing in this case, and what was recognized by the trial court, was to recognize the fact, which is agreed to on both sides, that the 2.12 acres was of such a shallow depth that it would unduly penalize the tract and the landowner to appraise that as a separate unit which the law of the state requires. Therefore, we in effect said, Judge, give us the benefit of the Ramsey case, the writ refused case by the Texas County Court, I believe it was, in 1975, and let us add 90 feet to this tract of ground in order that we'd have a unit that would not be penalized for shallow depth and configuration and so on. And that the court allowed us to do.
Mr. Davis, in order to do what you are suggesting, do we have to find Texas Property Code Section 21.42E unconstitutional? Or can we stop short of that?
Hopefully not begging the question. And ever so respectfully, were I in your place, I would rule it that it is unconstitutional. I think this opinion can be written in such a fashion that it may not be.
How?
The Court of Appeal, 14th Court of Houston, has found one sentence that is unconstitutional, and I would think that the other sentence is unconstitutional as well, without a doubt, on the basis that beginning with the Ferris case in 1863, the Carpenter case in 1936, the Meyer case in 1966, the Enterprise case, writ refused by this court a year or two ago, the Oak Hill case that was referred to by the state in the earlier argument, all point out the fact that Meyer case is alive and well. It has been cited by courts other than those that I mentioned. It's been cited by the Waco court in the Corsicana case. Nobody has ever said that the Meyer case is dead. We submit respectfully, Justice, that it is alive and that it is well and has been ever since 1966. If that's true, we have a right to waive damages to the remainder. I think there are three situations, as pointed out by Mr. Heidenheimer. We can have a tract of ground such as the Meyer case, where there was over 100-acre tract, of which 15 acres would be taken. A self-sufficient unit, the landowner felt safe in saying, Judge, let's appraise that and talk about nothing more. The court said, fine. The second case is the Brogdon case, wherein, at the landowner's option, matter of fact, all of these are at the landowner's option, if you please, can say, I'd like to have it appraised as a part of the whole. And lastly, where we have this situation that I attempt to portray as a plat, where the 2.12 acres is simply not enough to develop for purposes of the measure of the highest and best use of the tract, recognizing that this was selected not by the landowner, not in some kind of private treaty, but was selected by the state in discharge of their duty to widening this highway. We've simply said that it's reasonable, if you add 1.72 acres to it, or 90 feet to give us a 200-foot depth, then we'll see what the appraisers have this track of ground. And we filed a motion in limine. I might mention, I think it's interesting in this situation.
Before you go on, let me try to understand this. Why 90 feet then? Who determines that? And what's the
landowner determined that.
On what basis? Why, you know, why not 100 feet or 120 feet or more? Why 90 feet?
Frankly, we had consulted with our experts, and our experts felt that a 200-foot depth for a length of about 870 feet on the highway would be sufficient to develop for the highest and best use of the property. It could have been.
All right, that was your theory of the case.
Yes.
The state had a different theory. They wanted to go pro rata, and you were successful by motion of limine to keep them from developing their case. Now, why isn't their argument right, that they ought to be given the opportunity to develop their theory of the case, present their evidence, and let the jury decide what the economic unit is?
Well, sir, the best way that I can answer your question is to say that it's critically important in this case to distinguish between, on the one hand, differences in methods of appraisal, which is a factual issue for the jury's determination, and on the other hand, differences in theories of compensation. which is a legal issue for the court's determination. A method of appraisal versus theory of compensation. We have no complaint here. The method of appraisal used by the state in accordance with a motion in limine in the sense of the appraiser's use of other neighborhood sales said to be comparable to the tracket issue with a value for the part extrapolated from such so-called comparable. In other words, the state's appraiser appraised 3.84 acres using the market data approach. Nothing wrong with that, and I might add, he wanted to compare 3.84 acres to a 19-acre tract, a 25-acre tract, 10-acre tract. That's his business. That's a method of appraisal.
Mr. Davis, if you had designated the entire 19-acre tract as the economic unit, could you have done that?
Yes, sir.
And you would be entitled to compensation from the state for that tract. They would not have been able to dispute your designation of the entire tract as the economic unit. Is that
right? I think that's the Brockman case cited in the Ramsey case. Yes, sir.
That's the landowner's prerogative.
I think that the landowner has that option. And Mr. Justice Gonzales did not make this clear in my opinion. I believe in the Ramsey case, this was something like 350 feet. It was an arbitrary designation by the landowner based upon the community in which the land was situated as to what would be a reasonable depth to cause the land to realize its highest and best yield. We wouldn't be in this game, frankly, if the state would not instruct their appraisers to disregard the Meyer and the Ramsey case. We just wouldn't be in this situation. Because many appraisers, and perhaps the state's appraiser in this case, would have determined this unit for himself without the necessity of the motion in limine. I notice that the green light is on, and I'm not wanting to run afoul of your rules, but two or three points that I would like to make before closing. Mr. Ray appraised and made his offer of proof, or by his testimony, stated the offer of proof in regard to the fact that 19 acres of ground. So doing, he found that the value of 2.12 acres was, in his opinion, 77 cents per square foot. Motion in limine was filed, asking that he appraise the 3.84 acres, of which the 2.12 is a part, and he found that it was a value of $1 per square foot. The point I think is, I can't emphasize in my judgment too much what that means in this case, and as it relates to the motion in limine. Had it not been for the motion in limine, the jury would have never known that the state's appraiser truly thought that the 3.84 acre tract was worth $1 a square foot. He would have testified to the 77 cents, which to me violates the Carpenter case rules therein contained, simply because we're not paid for the part taken as a surveyor tract, which has been the law in the state since 1936. And respectfully, I don't believe the legislature, even in their wisdom, has got the right to change a judicial interpretation of the Constitution of the state of Texas, which is Article 1, Section 17, and which this court has stayed with since 1863. The next point I'd like to make is on one might call this the disparity of compensation charge. If the court could...
Counsel, your time's up. Does anybody want to ask a question?
Yes. What is your point here?
If one would assume that landowner A had 3.84 acres of adjacent to Highway 6, and that's all he owned. Period. His total tract was 3.84. And the state decreed we're taking 3.84. Under the facts of this case and the testimony of Mr. Ray and his appraiser, he would be paid $1 per square foot. Under the facts of this case, if a joining landowner B owned 19 acres, the state took 3.84 acres, further assumed, same project, further assumed that the two 3.84 acre tracts are as nearly identical as two pieces of land can be, he's going to be paid 77 cents by the testimony of Mr. Cleo Ray. In other words, this is one of the rare instances wherein jurisprudence affairs. Now, a person is penalized because of wealth. 3.84 acres full ownership, 20 acres, this man receives the difference between $1.77 less simply because he owns more land. And this can be carried on out, as the Chief Justice has suggested, for 1,000 acres and so on down the line.
We respectfully submit to you, Your Honor, that the judgment of the trial court and the court of appeals should be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Hey, please, before justices, I have a few points that I want to make that were raised that are excellent points. First thing I want to point out is Mr. Davis has stated that he's relying on State v. Meyer for the proposition that this factual issue shall not be allowed to go to the jury. Meyer can be readily distinguished because in that case, both sides agreed that the part taken had a considerably higher market value than the balance of the remaining property. The heart and soul of this case is Mr. Davis asserts that this is a legal issue, and in fact, it is a factual issue. You've heard the cliche that there are three things that determine the value of real estate: location, location, location. What you're really saying is market demand. Are you located at the right place, close enough to enough people that you can develop your property? Because you can have the best tract in the world, and if it's 10 miles west of Pecos, you're not going to be able to put a Holiday Inn on it. You can have that same tract, and if it's in Austin, Texas, you can't. It's an appraisal fact issue. It's not a legal issue, and that's the reason that the jury should be allowed to determine. Mr. Davis alluded to the fact that Mr. Ray came up with an estimation of value based on the 3.84 acres. I recall when I was a freshman in high school, I saw my first calculator. The teacher explained, students, the calculator doesn't do you any good unless the information you put in it is correct. It'll always give you an answer. The key here is, if there's not enough market demand out on Highway 6 today where this tract is, or on the day to take it for the jury trial, if there's not enough market demand to cause someone to purchase just 3.84 acres for a highly commercial use, then the highest and best use of that property is going to be to wait until that day arrives, which is exactly what Mr. Ray found, and he explained very poignantly through his offer proof that I put in the brief, what he found in the market that indicates that there's not sufficient market demand to cause someone to purchase only 3.84 acres. That's the key. It's a fact issue now.
Then why did he say it was worth $1 an acre and the 19-acre tract was worth 77 cents?
He had to assume that there was sufficient market demand to cause someone to purchase just 3.84 acres if, in fact, the landowner owned 19. If there's sufficient demand out there for, say, a 7-Eleven use, someone's going to be willing to pay a high enough price that a buyer and seller can agree to sell that portion of the property.
I don't understand why he had to assume that.
He has to look at the market to see if there's sufficient market demand for that. Otherwise, it's an artificial exercise.
Let me ask you this. Isn't the frontage usually a lot more valuable than the back land? Should that be factored in, and was it factored in properly in this case?
The key is highest and best use. First of all, the answer to your question is generally yes. But the key is highest and best use. You have to determine what's the highest and best use of the property fronting the highway. And then that creates the independent economic unit. And within that independent economic unit, every acre is worth every other acre. Because if you take this argument to the extreme, the front foot would be worth more than the front third foot. Obviously, if you're looking at the first yard of footage in depth, the third foot is going to be worth the same as the first foot. Why? Because you have to have a certain amount of area before you can develop a high suggestion. That just reaffirms and explains why this concept of independent economic unit is the whole basis of the appraisal process.
Are you in any way challenging the addition of the 90 feet to make this a 3.84 acre site for valuation purposes?
Our position is that based on the market, that our appraiser does not agree with that determination, but if the landowner wants to try to convince a jury that they're right, they certainly have that right. We're asking that we be given the right to explain to the jury why we believe the 19 acres is an economic unit as of the date of taking based on the actual market demand in the area. All we're asking is that we be allowed to litigate this fact issue. It's not a legal issue, it's a fact issue to the jury.
Counsel, should we take into account the fact that the landowner has no option but to sell the property at some price? This is not an open market.
Yes, sir. The carpenter requires that we pay market value. That's what a willing buyer and a willing seller would agree upon in terms of money. The seller wanted to sell, didn't have to, and the buyer wanted to buy.
We have, in many situations, unwilling sellers, but they have no choice under these circumstances. Isn't it only appropriate that they get to designate the economic unit under those circumstances?
No, sir, because they're entitled to the market value of the property. If there is not sufficient economic demand to carve out a separate independent economic unit, then our whole analysis is artificial. The law doesn't say that they're entitled to the market value of their property if there was sufficient market demand for the entire state building. It says they're entitled to the market value of the property on the data table of what they actually own. And if the landowner isn't located in a place where there's sufficient market demand to carve out a separate economic unit of 3.84 acres and he owns 19, then that would be inconsistent with the definition of market value, because market value is what he owns on not what he may own 20 years ago, or what he may never own. Last thing I want to say is that the Councilman for the State has found no instance in the law in which one party is allowed to stipulate, or not stipulate, but declare by fiat and determine a disputed fact issue and enforce the other party to accept that for purposes of jury trial. And in effect, that's what we have. We have a disputed fact issue. Landowners filed a motion in limine stating that for purposes of testimony and valuation that the economic unit will be 3.84 acres.
Counsel, your time has expired.
Yes, sir. The state.
Anybody have a question?
Accept that.
Thank you. Foregoing calls is submitted on briefs and oral arguments. That concludes the audience session of the court, and the marshal will please adjourn.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.